All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. What's up, y'all? Last week on Questlove Supreme, Greg Phillinganes took us on a journey through his career from auditioning for Stevie Wonder's band fresh out of high school to working with the Jacksons during the Destiny and Triumph years. And when we left Greg, he was telling us how he got Jack for his writer's credit for 10% of the publishing royalties for Michael Jackson's Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And he also said there was a Quincy Jones version of that story, too. So here's part two of the special Greg Phillinganes edition of Questlove Supreme. Here we go.
So, you know, it's
what's the song?
Well, Amir.
100 ways. 100 ways.
No.
Oh, damn.
Oh, no, 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 no. That, there's something a lot more subtle.
Oprah.
Huh?
Oprah theme? I was going
to get it. No, 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 no. You're never going to get it. You're not going to get it. I'm going to set it up for you because you're never going to get it. The
like
setup
movie.
Is this.
Now, this is great.
Yeah,
yes.
It's good, isn't it?
Yes.
You're having fun with
yes.
me. Yeah.
So much.
You want to do another one?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
We're doing
it. Okay. So here's the thing. The thing is this. So it's me and it's Neil Steubenhaus and I want to say Paul Jackson Jr. on guitar. I'm not sure, but I think so. And I'm pretty sure it's JR on drums. We're in the studio and we're just vibing, you know, we're just right about here. We're vibing. You know, and it's a nice little thing going on, and we're just vibing. You know, and Quincy's like, hey, all right. You know, we're just vibing, and this vibe is being recorded. You know, right about here. And okay, some time passes. And I don't mean hours, I don't mean days, I mean some time. And now Quincy's working on
Q's juke joint. I think I figured it out.
I believe so. Wait, before you all say anything, I believe mm-hmm. so. And he says, yeah, you know, we're doing this thing, and I wanna recreate that groove thing. You know, I wanna recreate that thing that's right about this tempo right here. And so, if you think you know it, what is the song?
Secret Garden.
Slow Jams.
Oh, damn, oh. I had the wrong one.
What'd you say?
Secret Garden.
Bingo.
Wow.
Tell me a secret.
Thank you.
Oh,
I'm doing a special secret.
Okay, and that's. Okay. Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, there's a story for everything. So it's like, I love Quincy's dirty draws, but he would never admit that. Because you know what? I asked him about it one day. He's like, what are you talking about?
Not, I was,
Long time ago, I asked him. And he reared up at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, okay, I get it.
Damn. Mm.
You got a good heart.
So after that joint came out.
No, I'm just pretty stupid.
Oh, well, I was just.
No, I mean, it's the game. No, here's the
thing. The thing is this. I was too busy being hurt. I was too busy being emotionally affected as opposed to saying, oh, hell with this. I'm fighting this. But really, are you really prepared to fight
Michael Jackson,
for a piece of a song with Michael and his
team of lawyers,
army of
Are you really gonna? Are you really think you're gonna like succeed in that? I have a freaking prayer. So what am I gonna do? Right. You know, and so I had to suck it up. But what I lost in, and look, 10%, please, I'd be living next to Quincy. Yeah. With 10% of that one
song. Yeah.
But you know what I lost in revenue? I'd like to think I gained in a relationship.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
because it went from that. And by the way, it ain't just that.
I know.
What else you got?
Oh, how about did the end of Heartbreak Hotel play itself?
You wrote that bridge.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. Which was orchestrated, doubled with strings and everything.
Yes.
Because Michael said, we need something dramatic here at the end. So I came up with that.
Wow.
And then they added an orchestra to that too.
Did you start after this? Do you start looking around when you're just jamming and making sure the button ain't pushed? Like?
No, darling, because I'm too busy being inspired.
Okay.
So because it happened so quick for me, literally when Michael said, we need something dramatic here at the end. Before you could finish the Jeopardy theme song,
I get it.
Okay. Oh, but it doesn't end there.
What else you got?
So now it's the Dangerous. Is it Dangerous? It's Dangerous. I think it's the Dangerous album.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Dangerous album. It's a Dangerous album, and we're working on this one song, and Michael says, beautiful song, by the way, beautiful. And he says, what I'm going to do here is I'm gonna talk kind of like a monologue thing, and I just want something, I want some music underneath.
Cause in the closet? Talk. In the closet?
Heal the world.
Ah.
Nope. And I just need, so I need some music, because it's going to be dramatic, and I'm going to talk through this thing at the end of it, you know, and so I just need some music. So I said, okay, no problem. Any takers?
Well, he talks on Dangerous for Lou Noon, your mama.
No. Is it the
right? I hate you so much. Wait, you can't even announce that joke?
Well, I missed it.
Your mama.
Shit. Is it, what was the, is it's not Heal the World?
That is not.
Is it that?
Oh, will you be there?
What?
Will you be there?
Bingo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, at the end.
Yeah.
Thank
at the,
you.
At the end. Okay,
the
I'm
end.
Thinking the beginning.
Which was double with orchestra and choir. Thank you. That is about another 3 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Somewhere two, three.
You missed
two,
out on that Free Willy money? Yeah.
So, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, can you explain to the listener who may not know the intricacies of what your jobs were at these sessions? So can you just explain the difference, like when arranging becomes writing,
songwriting,
when associate producing becomes composing?
Well, Steve, I'd love to explain that, except there's such a fine line and such a slippery slope. It's kind of hard to define, because this is the equivalent of beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. Well, arranging's in the eye of the who art. Deems you an arranger. As opposed to a songwriter, as opposed to just an arranger, as opposed to just a little keyboard player that we're going to give a check one time to and send him on his way, because I want all the credit.
Right. So ultimately, those things come down to whether you are going to stand up for
it. It comes down to either whether you're going to stand up and fight it, or if it's mutually agreed.
Yeah. I mean,
mutually agreed in writing.
Have you ever seen someone been like, hey, by the way, and then they didn't get a call back? Like, have you ever seen someone get blackballed or not used again? Or don't even mess with that guy. He's
a troublemaker.
Oh,
nothing specific. But like,
is there a way to be ixnayed and blackballed from, because you're in a sweet spot.
Yeah.
You keep getting work and you keep getting work and you keep, like, you're on, I mean, between, I between know, 77 I, and 97, you're on everything.
I know, but I mean, whenever I would try to raise a little dust, I always got pushback. I mean, there was the time when, what was it? It was Triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And I was classified as an associate producer. Well, things went on and on and on and on and on, and things were fine until one day I show up to the studio and Bill Bray standing outside the door.
What?
And he says, "Don't need you today, Bubba."
What?
I'm like, "What are you talking about? I gotta go." And he says, "Don't need you today, Bubba." They just decided that I was done.
Wow.
Because anymore they would have to pay you.
Did you say something the day before?
No. I did nothing. The day before, I went into work. Everything was fine. The next day, I go and I'm barred.
Yeah, sometimes people bar you because they feel bad about what you've done.
No. They just decided they could take it over from there. And they did not need my assistance.
You gave
them their boost. Yeah, they didn't need my assistance anymore. So they just said, okay, you're done. Bye.
Can I ask? All right. So my question about Triumph, engineering wise,
but I do have a positive punchline story to the end to what
finish.
I just said.
Okay,
but you want to ask?
Yeah. Well, just the engineering of the Triumph album,
yeah,
sounds very flat to me, as opposed to how wide open Destiny was. And I know nobody. I really need you to tell me a really good engineering story of Bruce Wardeen. What Bruce Wardeen brought to Off the Wall, it's like,
oh my goodness, it almost, my goodness, it's like 3D almost.
Who did the same? Were the same? Do you remember who mixed the Triumph?
I don't. But the same people were not involved. And I kind of understand what you're saying sonically, but I just can't tell you why. I'm not, because I don't remember who was involved.
So you weren't there for the overseeing of the mixing and none of that stuff?
Oh no.
No. Side question.
Yeah.
Those sessions,
yeah,
sounded really fun because
they absolutely were.
It's almost to the point where I could tell almost what order it was recorded. Because some of them songs, you did the majority of the count off. You were like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then some of them songs, you guys sound like you were on your 50th beer. I mean, not that, but just sound like, so what were the sessions like? I mean,
the best way I could describe it is fun. There was so much.
And how do you learn this stuff? Like, how does it come from, here's the cassette demo and da 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 da? Like, do you get the cassette first and do you work out these full-fledged arrangements and how long?
Yeah, we would hear the demo in some form, and then after I came up with the arrangement, I would just, we had charts. I have a chart. It's actually, my wife insisted that I frame the chart to Blame It on the Boogie, and so it's over It's over the piano in the house. So we had charts, and I would just dole out the parts. But it was hecka fun. It was just so much fun. I remember, and I think it was during the Destiny album, I remember being in the studio part, and we were just, you know, there wasn't anything going on officially. It's just kind of different things happening at the same time, just stuff going on. But I remember hearing somebody playing drums, and it was really funky. It was just like this thing, and I remember peering around, and it was Michael.
He could play drums?
He could play drums.
Oh, wow.
What?
Most people do not know this. But if you think about it, it made perfect sense because, like Sammy.
He's a dancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he beatboxed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so he could definitely play. And he was fun. And it was, I only saw it one time, but I was like, wow. As a matter of fact, Amir, there's a picture of an even younger Michael playing drums, and I have it. Do you have it?
I've seen that photo.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But no, I saw him for myself, and it was like, wow, I didn't see this coming.
Oh my God, we didn't even get to like Thriller and Off the Wall.
Listen, I'm waiting for the Streets of Fire. And
oh Lord! Let me give you the positive punchline to all this negativity, because lie is, as I was saying, what I lost in revenue, I gained in relationship, to the point where, you know, there was this one fateful evening where we were all together in this room backstage in this arena. And we were all together outside of Michael. I went to his room separately, but I'm standing there with the brothers in a circle, and I remember saying to them, you know what? Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think, after, you know, listening to your records, junior high school, and watching your shows, I never ever imagined in my life that I'd be standing in a room with all of you as your music director getting ready to tell you to have a great show. And it was backstage in Madison Square Garden, and we were about to do the 30th anniversary shows.
Wow.
And to go from that point early in my life as a fan and having just fantasies about them and what it must be like to hang with them, to actually be arm in arm with them in a huddle before we start the 30th anniversary shows, and I get to tell them, have a great one. I can't begin to tell you what that's like.
Yeah. But that sense of balance in your system is amazing, because at the same time, it's like, here you are in that moment, but these are still the same guys that may did a couple of shady things to you. So you have to continue to be the bigger person and really just appreciate the moment and the bigger things that are yet to come.
Well, thank you. All I can say is that, you know, the thing that won over everything else was love. Mm. And we all realized that we really do love each other.
Wait, I'm not done the technical nerd questions.
Oh, by all means.
We over here evoking emotions.
Yeah, emotions.
And you over here like, what microphone?
Yeah, let me ruin this for a second. So, wanna be starting something.
Yeah.
Are you playing the synth bass, the line?
Yep.
Yep. Now, was sequencing out then, or did you have to do that 7 minutes in a row?
No, I did it.
There wasn't tape looping?
I don't need no stinking sequencer.
Come on, man. But look, dude, y'all were playing with a Lindrum. So you're telling me for 7 minutes.
Yeah, I'm telling you that.
7 minutes in a row. Because
I was just young and crazy like that.
How many punch-ins did you have to do?
Not many.
Phew. Dog.
No, dude, because I graduated Wonder U.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's like Jimmy Jam when he said when he would play all the stuff from the 12 inch versions.
Yeah,
right.
All, straight through. And they went to the School of Prince, so.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, okay.
It makes sense.
No, it's just. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just thinking of all, like, even you didn't veer off into one ad lib on Shake Your Body Down to the Ground to like the last minute.
No, that's not true. That's not true. You got to.
Well, okay, there was some.
I had little things, but I paced it. To your point, yes, I definitely paced it.
Okay, you're right. You did.
You know, and another thing is another example of that is Don't Stop. I paced those licks too. I mean, I kept basically. Oh, an even better example is Thriller.
That's what I want to get to.
Yeah.
Oh, you already answered. You're not sequencing, so you're playing the stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
How are you finding these patches? Because now that the remixes are coming out.
Yeah.
Thrill is almost borderline a precursor to EDM, at least with the patches that you're using. Like, how long do you, that's what I'm saying, like, in.
Well, we had lots of help as far as programming. We had guys like that
Michael
were,
Boddicker.
That, we had Michael Boddicker. He was like on call. That was our go-to guy. And there were others, but
was
like,
he more of a tech guy or an actual
player?
Well, because he was playing on the Jackson tour.
He played,
but he programmed better.
But he, yeah, the strength, I would say, was the programming.
That was the bread and butter.
So, yeah. But was it a time is money atmosphere? So, okay, so we're in the studio right now.
It was whatever it takes to get the right sound.
Okay, but what's the patience factor? Because it's like. Even the little, like right before Vincent Price's rap thing,
mm-hmm.
How long do you have to like, let me try this. Let me try this. Even with Keyboards Today, like it takes me 20 minutes to decide, and this stuff is already preset.
Mm-hmm.
What's the time? Like, what time do you have to think of something cool? Do you have mere minutes?
No, there was no time. There was no...
When it was right, then you knew.
Yeah, there was no consideration of time. It's just like, Lily, I need this patch. Go. I need this sound, rather. Go. And it's, however long it took was however long it took.
Are you playing on Beat It?
Yeah.
What is that intro gong? What is that noise? What is that?
I could not tell you if you held me at gunpoint.
I saw a YouTube video. It's obviously an old synthesizer, and they were going through the presets on it, and that was one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
not Synclavier?
I can't remember. It's been a while since I saw that video. But
okay. No, I have no idea, bro.
What was that?
Human Nature, is that Paige and all those cats?
Yeah, that's Steve Picaro.
Okay.
But they didn't need me for that. It's my man, Steve Picaro. You know the story about that song, right?
Yeah.
Quincy, he told us about it.
Quincy and Rod listening to cassettes ad nauseum, and then they're like falling asleep and stuff, and it's the
auto end reverse.
Auto reverse, and then, you know, and they're like in a semi-sleep state, and all of a sudden, like, what is that? Rest is history.
Wow. It was a Synclavier, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of remember that now, yeah.
Synclavier 2.
Okay, 100 Ways is one of our favorite solos.
Really?
You don't.
Oh my God, you guys.
You're not going to understand it.
Wow.
But in hip hop terms.
Really?
That's all I can say. Yes, it's been really chopped lovely to the point where, like, almost every line of that thing is
the solo.
Yeah. Yeah.
It means the world to us. It was done in an ironic, I think it was done in a very ironic way, but it just
stuck. You might as well play it. I mean, it's, you know, it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the song's been out for forever.
So. Yeah.
Wait, what's the title of it?
Rhymes Like Dimes.
Yeah, this is Jesus Christ.
Really?
Hey, yo, y'all can't stand right here.
Uh-oh.
In his right hand was your man's worst nightmare. Loud enough to burst his right eardrum close range. The game is not only dangerous, but it's most strange. I sell rhymes like dimes. The one who mostly keep cats brag about the broken times. Joker rhymes like the is you just happy to see me trick. Classical slapstick rappers need chapstick. A lot of them sound like they're in a talent show, so I give them something to remember like the Alamo. Tally ho, a high joker like Space Game. Came back from 5 years late.
I mean,
what do you say?
This is
My jaw is dropped. I've never heard this before.
This song is near 20 years old. But
what?
See, yeah. That's the thing.
I've never heard this. This is my first time hearing this. I've never.
100 Ways means something totally different
to us.
Like, initially, it was like, yeah, that's mom and dad's song, or like, easily. No, but he turned.
Well, not with that.
Yeah, but he turned it. And even when I heard it, I was like, yo. Yeah. I never ever thought that this could be chopped.
Yeah.
That's a crazy person who did that.
That's a person with
a whole lot of time on there.
Yes. MF Doom is very, very
crazy. Who actually did that? Who actually produced that?
MF Doom.
MF Doom, you're a crazy guy. You're crazy, bro.
He is. So,
well, did Quincy tell you the story of that solo?
He told you, like, he woke you up out of your sleep.
Yeah.
That
was during the time of assembly line sessions, and when you went to work for Quincy, you knew two things. You knew three things. A, it was gonna be fun. B, you were gonna eat well. And C, you never knew how long you were gonna be. So I mean, it's 9:00 in the morning, man, and I had done some other stuff, and at this point, I'm asleep under a piano. Somebody came in and woke me up and said, "All right, you're up again." I go, "Okay." In my stupor, I stumble up to the thing, and it's a mini Moog, and Quincy says, "Right, so this is 100 Ways, and we need a solo. Go."
Wow,
that's how it was.
Does he play you the full? Does he play you the full song at least before?
Well,
you?
Yeah, I mean, they play the song, and I'm like, okay. So what you hear in that solo, like, 90% of it was the first take, and I only did and then I only did like a couple of takes to finish it, But up until that point, that's the first take. Wow. And Quincy to this day says it's his favorite solo of mine because it was done in the what he calls the alpha state. Or what's known as the alpha state. Because, you know, only he can, like, be scientific with it. I was asleep. But, you know, he said, no, dude, it's the alpha state, alpha state. Because you weren't thinking.
Dude,
wow.
Do y'all know about this? There's a scientist that there's a scientist that did a research on her students in which she would do pop quizzes on her 7 a.m. class versus prepared test advance notice to her smarter class at 12 in the afternoon. And the pop
7 a.m. class will win.
They did better because it's almost like
we overthink.
There's a middle ground of not preparing and over preparing and overthinking.
Yeah.
And the genius zone is always in the middle where it's just like.
Yeah. No, I think
Quincy
it's
lives
that.
For that.
So does Questlove Supreme.
Yeah. His goal is to be in that state constantly.
Wow.
And so that's where I was. And again, it only took like three takes or so for me to. finish it, but that whoop, 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 that's just the first thing that came out.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte Gallo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have a question about the Bad album.
Yeah.
and I guess I shared this theory in the documentary. It's what I call the brace yourself moment, mm-hmm. which you're a big part of. Like, all these songs have to start with this stab from hell, this chord. Right. Well, not even that. I mean, that's probably an easy patch, but like, you know, like Dirty Diana's. Mm-hmm. And that, like, by this point, are they telling you, okay, Greg, every song on this album, we need.
Well, no, because that really wasn't me.
That wasn't?
No. Those examples you cited, like, with. First of all, I'm not on Dirty Diana.
Oh.
I'm not on that at all.
Another part of me?
And actually, I'm not on that either.
Speed Demon?
You on Way You Make Me Feel?
I'm on The Way You Make Me Feel. Okay. I'm not on Speed Demon, unfortunately. That's Jerry Hay. That's crazy Jerry Hay with those horns. And that's what made the song. You know that.
Yes.
Jerry had to get tightened up for that. Because, you know, Michael was a little, slow on that. And it was like, oh, no, and Quincy was like, oh, no. There would be no Speed Demon without that horn arrangement. So you're going to tighten up, Jerry. You know, but I am on The Way You Make Me Feel. And my favorite memory of that is, you know, because I played the string parts. Right? Yeah. So what I remember is doing that and having Michael standing next to me going, yes. Vibing with me because I'm like, dun, dun, and he's like,
neck moving, dun,
dude.
So that was fun.
How big is his snaps?
Yeah.
Dude, he had the big. I know he had these big ass hands, and his snaps sound like claves, don't they?
Yes,
because you think it's claves on the bridge of
Rock With You.
Yeah, but it's not.
No.
And when the groove, that's his fingers.
I thought that was claves.
Nope, it's his fingers.
Wait, can I ask for Rock With You?
Yeah.
Who? Well, I guess I should have asked Quincy instead. That horn intro?
Oh. The one that got removed?
Why did they take that away?
It doesn't make sense to me.
What horn intro?
It's just there's a horn intro to Rock With You that got mixed out.
See, here's the thing that I love about Off the Wall.
Well, I certainly don't remember that.
I'll play it for you off the record.
Yeah.
The thing that I discovered about with Thriller and Off the Wall is that a lot of this stuff is, I can tell that at least what I assume the relationship between Michael and Quincy is, let's try every idea out, mm-hmm. and then you're going to trust me to pull this away, mm-hmm. and this away and edit this and edit that. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of elements on those albums that, had they been there, oh, God, it would have been like the worst dated disco album of all time. Or, you know,
isn't that crazy?
One slight misstep. So yeah. I applaud Quincy for knowing what to pull away.
But
there's,
and that's
just,
his brilliance.
There's just moments of, okay, so I'm thinking that you were there on the ground floor of the horn intro instead of just the naked.
No, because what I remember about that was Quincy saying to JR, I want to have a drum lick that's going to live in infamy. I want to have a drum like that that kids are going to remember, you know, 100 years from now. And so he came over with it. That was that.
Oh. Bad question. Please tell me that by this time you went on the tour and you and Ricky were back together.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
No, how did Ricky get that gig and not Jonathan Moffitt? Because you were the MD? Because I thought like Jonathan would have been the Jacksons drummer for life.
Yeah, you'd think that.
So how did Ricky get it? Well, Ricky also had the Victory Tour, right?
No, that was Jonathan on Victory.
Okay.
Ricky did Bad and Dangerous.
I saw that show.
You did?
Yeah, with Sheryl Crow.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. What were you, three?
Yes. I was.
You just made this woman's life.
Yes, I was.
You couldn't have been more than five.
I'm like 10.
Ten, please. Okay, so still. I still have socks older than you, please. And so I don't remember, to be honest, because even though, you know, he made me the MD and that whole process was so weird, there were other people hiring people, so I didn't really hire everybody. So I didn't hire the whole band. I mean, there are certain people that were chosen before I was even asked.
How did you present that show without out of the age of Pro Tools? You know, because the bad tour.
Well, no, that's easy. We just had like, was it two? Or at least two full-blown synclavias.
Oof. Yeah. Damn.
And back then, that was a lot of money.
And y'all are touring with
him. Yeah. It was like whatever, by any means necessary. I mean, the money was no object. And so we had like two full-blown.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was his first real tour.
To handle the background vocals and the extra tracks. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Damn. Wow. Man, what was it like when Sheryl Crow came into the picture for that tour? Like, what did she bring to the table?
Whiteness.
Sorry.
Because she wasn't the one with the lights in her hair. No.
No, that was Jennifer Batten. She was the guitarist. You know, you ask a very loaded question, my young friend.
Okay.
That was Saida's gig first,
because,
right?
No, she was after.
Okay.
That was, Saida did Dangerous. Sheryl did Bad. I would say that the thing that Sheryl brought the most was...
Yeah! Oh. Yeah! Oh, Steve is walking
silence.
Out.
The silence. The silence here. Is this a hot topic that we
something
should...
Something I said, Steve?
It's like the white person about to get single again.
No, what she brought was a secret love affair.
Okay.
Oh.
Here in my garden? Oh.
Well, who?
Well, between two people, and I was the other one.
Oh.
Yeah. Exclusive.
Oh.
Yes, Greg.
Damn. Like, yeah, you can sniff.
No, that was Fonte's question.
Yeah,
that was Fonte.
Oh, my fault.
You know, Fonte had a cup of shade. Yeah. What you got to say, Fonte?
That's a perfect question.
Nah, man. Hey, listen. I guess asking questions. You talking. You know,
I guess you didn't see that coming, eh?
Nope.
Well, wow, Steve, you missed out.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, man.
He's probably in the control room right now.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Man.
Good for you.
No, it wasn't good because I was married, Liar.
He said secret love affair.
Yeah.
That's
Greg.
The thing.
Bad
how can
Greg.
You
yes,
be?
Yes, I was bad.
How? Okay. So explain.
Not just a tour, darling. I was
explain,
bad.
Explain that.
It wasn't just the name of a tour.
Yeah.
How can, how can one be a working musician and have domestic normalcy? I mean, if you're doing the Michael Jackson Bad Tour, are what about the kids at home for it? Not just you, just like the bass player or the lighting coordinator. Like, you guys were going from 87 to the top of January 89.
No, understand, we ruled the world. Understand that.
Yes.
But... Were girls flinging themselves over all of us? Not over all of us. And I was in that group. I wasn't getting girls flung at me, you know, because a lot of people just assume, oh, my God, you must have had it dripping out of your ears. Mm-hmm. And that did not happen to me.
I didn't mean it from that perspective, but I just meant, like,
can you be
if you have a
married?
Relationship at home, like if your college professor wife is at home.
No, it's very, very difficult, and you better bring him out at some point.
Or like, would Michael allow, like, would he charter jet for families to come visit?
No, he didn't do that. But he did welcome families. He was into that. And, you know, several of us, including me, brought our families out at different points. I mean, and, you know, Michael, you know, one of the singers, Dorian Holly, brought his little Nayana. And she spent a lot of time on the road with us. And, you know, Ricky brought his kids and his wife. I brought mine out. It was great in that way.
Didn't help.
Not in my case. I mean, I remember when we were in Tokyo, and he arranged for us to all go to Disneyland.
Just wow. y'all. Is it just y'all?
We shut down the park, baby, yes. and it was us. Wow. And you haven't lived until you've been to Disneyland with the head Mickey. And matter of fact, I used to call him Mickey, and he would answer to that too. But no, it was great. And so, yes, he loved, you know, the family's hanging and all that. But to answer the question, yeah, you needed to have, you couldn't sustain a tour like that and never see your spouse or your family. Mm-hmm. At any point, you had to have them join you.
It's easier now with FaceTime and all that stuff, but oh, like, back then it was like
no, it was rough.
No, but it's like going to, like it's a wrap. Like, yeah, it's like you're going to do a bid.
Yeah, you're going like you're doing a. It's, you're in the military. Yeah, you know? It's like you're gone.
I would have been Valerie Simpson.
Wait a minute, whoa. We did not even ask about Behind the Mask.
Oh yeah,
well yeah.
Oh, Behind the Mask. Yeah, so I was working on my second solo album. While working on
the Pulse,
yeah. While we were also doing,
oh my God, wait a minute,
Thriller.
We're just right. all over the place.
We are because right. we have.
Remind me to remind you just that Lionel did right by you.
Oh, for Can't Slow Down.
Never mind.
No, so, no. Well, he did basically. Yeah, he did. Well, he did better to me than Michael did. That's for sure.
Right. Or did you do All Night Long? And
No.
Here,
no.
Let me give you Love Will Find a Way.
Yeah. No. He actually did All Night Long by himself. But I did Love Will Find a Way and Love Will Conquer All.
Yes,
and,
you did.
Okay.
The two best songs.
And I thank you very much.
And a crazy video.
Yeah.
And I did get credit and checks for that.
Who sang on Love Will Conquer All?
Crap. I can't remember her name right now. I see her face and I can't remember her name. Shoot.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah,
I always thought that was his take on an Al Green song. Like, that was Love Will Conquer All.
Interesting.
No.
That's what it sounds like. It might
sound like that. Well, yeah, I didn't really because I well, well, I tell you what. I wasn't. Well, not really, because I wasn't thinking of that.
Okay,
that wasn't my.
I don't hear that.
So
that song is so
I
good.
I love it.
That's interesting that you, because I wasn't thinking of that at all.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
Marva King.
That was Marva King. Marva, thank you. Yes, it was
Princess Marva King.
Well, later
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Because I keep getting her and Marva Hicks confused.
Okay,
she's the one with James Brown, right?
Was Marva,
no, that was Marva,
Marva
Whitney.
That was Marva Whitney.
Yeah.
A lot of Marvels.
Yeah, Marvel.
Oh, nice of you to join us, Steve. Thanks.
You missed it, Steve. Fair. It was. You missed it. It was the good news. It wasn't bad
well,
news.
Well, you'll hear the replay. It's all
yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So, So Lionel did do Right to Err by me.
Okay. Wait, you worked on his first solo album, right?
Yeah. And
that was where I first saw your name. Yeah, when I
really?
Was like four, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then he left during the Lionel Richie portion.
And
one his favorite people.
That's all he lives for, Lionel Richie.
Right, the first Lionel Richie, you're on that.
You don't have the right to come here and ask questions. You got to sit
no,
for a second.
The intro to You Are.
No, he is so serious.
No, what you sound like right now, Steve. No, first of all, I'm not on that. But what you sounded like, Steve, was like, are you out of there? Okay, if you don't come back if you leave. But you sound like that. What was that?
What
some
about
kind
my,
of movie.
My
no,
love?
Some kind of movie was like the guy goes, no, I was like an SNL
that's
thing
amazing,
where you,
yeah.
you know, the thing that you did.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was a mirror when we first started the show.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, serves you right. That was well, Mr. Phil and
what about my love?
Oh yeah, and I wrote that with
serves you right.
Very mysterious John McClane. Yes.
Oh
wow.
The executive John McClane.
Yep. Wow, I didn't. Yep.
So oh my God, there's some more John McClane credits that I've seen, and I didn't think that was him. He was a songwriter first.
Well, we.
Oh wait a minute! You didn't.
Oh,
get
I got
credit
a story.
For serves you right.
Oh, I got a story about me and John.
Hit me.
Well, John, who I love. Dearly, let me just start out
preface
by saying
that. All right.
Let me just say that right now. I do love him dearly. I really do. He's the kind of guy that you'll never get to love because he just doesn't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
But I love him. And we spent a lot of time together in 79 and the early 80s. We spent a lot of time together. And I had this dream. We had this dream of forming a band that would be called PM. Oh. And never, what? Yeah, and never happened.
He's from Detroit?
No, he's from here. But we hooked up somehow, and he was the first guy that sounded like Prince before Prince. That's how he played guitar.
That yeah. John McLean?
Yep.
Man.
Yep. That John McLean.
We gotta find this motherfucker.
Well, if you do, you will win the ultimate prize.
We gunning for him. It's just we can't find him.
You know what? Sorry to say, but you probably won't.
Really?
Yeah, he's that mysterious. You know what? You can Google anybody on the planet.
Yeah, I was about to say, him. I can't even, if he walked in right now, I wouldn't know him. I've never seen
you
what he looks like.
You can't Google
him. I imagine that he looks like Stoney Jackson.
I found an old picture of him. But yeah.
No.
Is he a brother? Is he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's a black guy.
Damn.
But no, you can't find him.
Wow.
Damn, so he Medina-ized his way into the industry as an executive. The same way that Benny Medina was a musician.
He was in Apollo, right?
Yeah,
he's Benny Medina, Lord.
Yeah. Apollo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. That shit was bad off.
But no, actually.
It's good.
Actually, John was a little more legitimate. But anyway.
We need a theme for it, Greg.
Yeah, you do. You do. Or maybe I'll just come up with my own. I'll just do a couple of spots for you. But anyway.
Don't be teasing us now.
Yeah. But, don't write a check. Cash can't cash.
Give over now.
You can't pay for it.
But, yeah. That's right. you might be surprised. Oh. Anyway, so.
Evan?
Yes.
So y'all had a group called PM.
No, we had a dream. We had the idea of a group, but it never came to fruition.
What projects? What? Okay.
But you know what we did work on together?
What?
A TV series. Oh, the name of the producer escapes me right now. But the show was called The Righteous Apples.
Oh, my God.
How about that?
The Righteous, yeah. They did a cover of Let It Go by Let the Love Out of Your Heart. It was a Page's joint originally. Richard Page did the joint. And then they did a cover of it. The Righteous Apples. It was like they were like a high school.
Yes.
Was this with Cindy Heron from?
No, but I'm trying to think of the name of the creator and the writer, and I can't for the life of me right now. Black guy, he wore round glasses.
PBS.
It was a PBS thing, and we wrote and produced songs for that show.
Like Rollerella.
Yeah. As a matter of fact,
I'm looking at the IMDb page right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and
we'll just pretend you're that smart.
I'm not.
Is there another song called Feels Like the First Time?
It doesn't list just this one.
Okay. But But yeah, we did that. And that was the crime.
Stoney Jackson was in it.
Stoney Jackson was in it.
All right.
Yeah.
All Stoney Jackson was in Streets of Fire. Stoney
yes, he was. But John doesn't look like Stoney.
No. And Ernest Thomas.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Ernest once thought I was Common's bodyguard.
That's hysterical.
That broke my heart, man.
That's hysterical. Well, that's funny.
So, yeah.
Oh, it was Topper Carew.
Thank you, Topper Carew.
Who went on to do Martin.
Martin, yeah.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yes. That was my introduction to Topper.
That was the first thing that you scored or like for television?
I think it was the only thing.
Okay, so
Michael Anderson was on there?
Sorry. Really?
He was on an episode, yeah.
He was?
I guess.
Was this a drama?
As a member of the band. Not okay. as like a speaking
role. I guess you can call it a drama sort of. Yeah, I guess.
Michael Henderson in it. What year?
80 and 81. That's when the show was on.
Oh, that's the cocaine Michael Henderson years.
Oh, that's messed up.
Bring this shit down to a whisper.
Can you please break it down, motherfucker? Have you ever heard of Michael Henderson's rant, drunken rant in Japan?
No.
Oh, dude. So
is it classic?
Oh, my God.
It's the best thing. Best thing in life. Just Google.
I'm not breaking it down for nobody. I'm not backing it up. Marvin Gaye's dead. Teddy Pendergrass is a fuck.
Oh wow.
Curtis Mayfield. They trying to kill Curtis Mayfield. Like he's just drunk and he's playing in front of it. Feels like he's performing for an audience of 14.
And you could hear people like, because he's responding to people, oh, you going to leave, baby? Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
People walking out.
And they're just like, just sing your song. I'm Reagan.
What
and
year is this? I'm looking.
It has to be 84.
Okay. Lie is not wasting any time.
No, I'm the one.
It has to be 84. And like Norman, I think Norman Connors is drumming, but he takes, it's a 7-minute buildup to sing Going Places.
Yeah.
And when he around, in dress,
a very special person. Like I was like, damn, it's like he gets into the verse before you realize it's Going Places.
Right.
It sounds nothing. I'm like, oh, that's what he's singing.
His son lives in Philly and keeps taking it off of YouTube.
Yeah, because I can't find it right now.
But someone keeps putting it
in. Messed up.
I got it. I got the MP3. Up. That shit ain't going nowhere.
Have you ever seen the version where they made a video to it? Stones Throw Stones Throw did like a clip.
An animated clip to it.
Oh, no. Really?
It's the best thing on earth.
Take me on motherfucking yours right motherfucking now. He goes into the next song. Dude.
Oh, this sounds better than Ray Charles's. It sounds better than Buddy Rich's. It sounds better than Freddie Hubbard's.
I haven't heard that one.
Pastor's Three.
Really?
Past those three.
They're
cursing people out, but this is just like he's just
Ray. Wow. Which one is the Ray? Where is he cussing people out at?
Oh, someone interrupts. Okay.
There's a scuffle between him and the drummer who at the time I think it was not Bernard, but
I thought it was Fathead.
Fathead was a sax player.
Yeah, Fathead was a sax player, but it was a scuffle between him and the drummer, and the drummer walked off and said, "That's all right. All right, no worries. All right." It was really tense. Yeah, that
okay. He's doing Busted. I have a version of him doing Busted.
Okay,
and then someone gets on the stage, is like, "You a dog? You a dog?" And Ray's just like, oh, "Bless your heart. Wow. Bless your heart. You were nothing but a dirty dog."
Oh, it's a woman.
A guy basically like Ray must have did something wrong to a woman, either slept with his wife or something.
He said,
"You ain't nothing but a dog." Yeah, bless your heart. Can someone please get this gentleman off the stage, please? You ain't nothing but a dirty dog. You a dog. And then they take him off, and then like you hear him walking, like Crash cuts out.
Oh, yeah. He see him walking back.
And then all right, let's start the song. like nothing happened. But yes, it's up there. But no, Michael Henderson.
Freddie Hubbard loses his shit. That's the name of it. Okay.
Drive at. So listen, I know you have a billion of these. What three songs did you say no to that you could have been on? Like, did you only stay in the winner's circle, Michael, Lionel, Stevie? Well,
the only example I have of that is a song that I was originally asked to overdub on piano.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very full of myself.
Oh no.
And I went and did the session, but I mean, I was full of myself musically, and I thought like whatever I played would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, because they just wanted something. They just wanted the changes in the rhythm that it was in. And I was overplaying.
Okay.
I overplayed my way out of the session, and I regret that, because I really love this song, and it's one of my favorites from George Benson. It's Turn Your Love Around.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah. How do you... They just wanted you to play the piano line?
They just wanted... Dun, 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 but I was playing... Dun, 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 dun. I was just overplaying, you know? Okay. Were they afraid to
ask you to just play simple?
I guess they just said, "Well, it's not okay. Thanks." And then the next thing I know, somebody else was on it. But I remember being asked to play on it, but I didn't play it right, you know. And I could have, and I even at that point, I was definitely more trained. mm-hmm. because of all the other years of doing sessions, and I just should have known better, but I overplayed.
Were you formally trained how to play music? We didn't talk about that. Were you formally, like, you know how to read, or was it just by ear?
I started playing by ear at, my mom says, legend has it, 2. I started playing by ear at around 2, but then I started taking lessons at around 6, and so I did have formal training.
Okay.
I had 3 teachers, and the third one was the most influential and the most effective, and he was the pianist with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and his name was Misha Kotler, and he was a badass. He didn't take any mess, and you know, I needed discipline because I was running over my last teacher because I thought I was hot snot and knew everything, and I left his house crying many times because he was this Russian, you know, like Polish, and he was, you know, very strict and took no mess, you know, but it's the discipline I needed.
That's what's up.
Wait, did Lukather produce that?
Quincy,
who
turned your love around? He actually, I think he might have been one of the producers. I think, I'm not sure, but
it wasn't Quincy though, right?
No.
Okay. No. Okay. What have you played on that we might not know? Like,
surprise! Jay Graydon did Turn Your Love Around.
Thank you.
That was Jay Graydon?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So weird.
Yeah. What have I played on that you may not? This is a hard question for you because you know everything.
I mean, like, you know, did you sub for, you know, Are You on the Heat Is On by Glenn Frey? Or
no.
Is that you playing on I Can't Tell You Why? No, the Eagles,
I wish.
That's really me playing on Hell Left. Yeah, that's right. Left, right?
No, I can't even think of anything.
You did a Floetry remix? Is that for real?
A Floetry remix?
Yeah. Or is Discogs lying to me right now?
I did a Floetry
remix? They did the
remix. Yeah, they're lying.
Oh, they did the remix. Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, they gave you credit.
Apparently. Really? Mm. Oh, okay.
Outside
thanks.
Of the...
Wait a minute.
What?
Oh, I'm so glad this came to me. It's going to kill me.
What?
I got to go back to Triumph.
Okay.
And explain. You said this to me once and I didn't know. Okay, so help me out here, guys. Dilla, Lightworks,
Raymond Scott.
There you go. Okay. On Your Ways, on Triumph.
I was going to ask about that, actually. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
You said, was that the exact what's going on? Like
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that the instrument used was a Mellotron. Yeah.
But the same one, did you tell me that that was the same exact one that Marvin used on what's going on?
Oh, I don't think so. I couldn't possibly know that.
Okay.
No, but I know it was
someone told me. Okay,
someone said that like that.
Either Randy, some
like Marvin had really? It, or that Barry had it specially made.
Well, yeah, and then Barry had. Do you know the story of Motown that Raymond Scott had convinced Barry Gordy to purchase 2 of his version of Tonto,
okay,
and he ordered 2 of them, and then I think mid second one they just discontinued the production. He was like, no, never mind.
But year was this?
70. 69, 70.
70.
Because I'm wondering if these instruments that you're talking about, if they were used in these incredible ways for songs like Reflections. Because I defy anybody to tell me what the hell that sound is in the opening. Whatever that is. So, and then they use something else later on, like whoop, 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 you know, in these random places in the song, which is brilliant, but I have no idea what it is.
Here it is. Okay, so 1969, okay. Barry Gordy tipped off about a mad musical scientist engaged in mysterious works.
Wow.
Visited Scott at his Long Island lab to witness the electronium. That's what he called it.
Electronium, wow.
Yeah, and all of its infinite possibilities. And Gordy hired Scott in 71 to serve as director of Motown's electronic music and research department in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And, okay. A position Scott held until 1977.
Really?
Wow. No Motown recordings using Scott's electronic inventions have been publicly identified.
Well, sad as that.
But yeah, someone says that he originally started working on the electronium out of Barry's house. They set up a room over the garages, and he worked there putting stuff together so Barry could get involved and see the progress. And at one point, worked out of the studio. The unit never got finalized, and Ray had a real problem letting go. It was always being developed, and that was a problem for Barry.
You know what? What do you think? It probably sounded like crap.
It was a waste of $700,000.
What do you think? It probably just wasn't good.
Yeah. Do you have a We Are the World question, Steve?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even put it together in my head that was you on that. Just, you know, is your name on the cover of that 45? Like,
no, not the cut. No, that's just the artist. But I did play piano on it.
Well, you're the artist. You're one of the artists then. What happened there?
No, I wasn't. No.
It's not on the cover?
No. No.
Ever since you walked out, it ain't been the same.
It really hasn't. I don't know what.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Greg, who was the artist, and maybe this is the same person, but who was the artist that you really ran to the studio outside of course, Stevie Jackson's Lionel, that you ran to the studio to work with because you were so excited? And who was the artist that you ran on tour to be with?
Nobody.
Because you were so excited. Is there anybody?
Well, as far as touring, you know, there was a time when I toured with a Beatle.
Okay.
Which one?
The Ring?
Nope. This other guy that I was touring with, I was in his band, and we already had a set thing going, and then that artist managed to convince George to tour with us, and he said, you can use my band. And so it was the Eric Clapton and George Harrison tour of Japan. Mm. And you haven't lived until you've toured with a Beatle.
Jesus
it
Christ.
It didn't suck. And we go to here's a crazy thing. We go to Tokyo, and of course George was absolutely lovely, beautiful human being. We go to Tokyo, and we're all terribly excited. We're in the hotel. It's called the Capital Tokyo Hotel. Mm-hmm. We're in George's room. TV's on, and they're playing footage. They're announcing, obviously, that George is in town, but they're playing footage of when the Beatles pulled up to the exact same hotel we're staying in. So now I'm in a suite with a Beatle watching footage of when his band pulled up
to the same hotel we're in. I'm like, okay, just kind of take this in for a second. And so we toured around. It was great. And then another George story, which I always love to tell. It was the second time I went to visit him at his home. And he opens the door, and he's in cornrows.
Who's that? Wow. George Harrison?
George Harrison was in cornrows. I kid you not. Okay. He opened the door and I go, well, I didn't see this coming, George. He's like, what do you think? I said, first of all, how did you even get your hair in cornrows?
Where is the black girl hiding?
Okay, how did that work? Yeah. But he was in cornrows. I wish I took a picture of him. But so we're hanging out, and then he goes, right, do you want to hear the new song then? I go, okay. We go up to the bedroom, plays the thing, and I got my private world premiere of Free
As a Bird.
Wow.
As a Bird. And I'm sitting there, and I'm absolutely transfixed and mesmerized. I can't believe that I'm, first of all, sitting in the bedroom of a Beatle listening to the last song all the Beatles did.
Damn, man.
And I'm sitting there, and chills are running up and down my spine. First of all, I'm getting chills even talking about this right now, but I'm sitting there, and I'm just trying to take all this in. I'm going, I'm in a room with George Harrison, and I'm listening to the last Beatles song. Oh, my God. I can't believe this is happening right now. But...
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, on the heels of that question, you also MD'd a lot of specials and award shows.
Yeah.
What was one of your favorite experiences with that? P.S. I really enjoyed watching you because you were always so animated. So.
Thank you. Well,
what was your first one that you did? Like your first awards that you...
Oh my goodness, I don't know. First award show that I MD'd? Wow, I don't know. I'd have to research that.
Awesome life.
Damn, so Ricky Minor wasn't born with that baton in his hand? He just...
Okay, here you go.
I'll just play it for yellow.
Thank you. But no, I don't remember. But I'll tell you what, pretty much the best one was. It was based off of how I got started.
The Jackson 3rd, the special, did...
Nope.
No, you said how you got started. So
how I got started.
So...
No, I was thinking of the Detroit Symphony thing.
Stevie.
Yeah.
What's Stevie spelled? Oh!
Songs in the Key of Life. It was a Grammy tribute. I MD'd it.
That's right. And you won a...
I won an Emmy. Yeah. So that's why that's the best one.
Ah. Wow. So you're a G, an egg.
Yeah. So the second best one is probably the Jackson's 30th anniversary at the Garden, because, I mean... This is the Jackson's 30th anniversary in the Garden.
Question.
Yeah.
Since that night was so vivid and that day after was so memorable.
Yeah.
And
by the way, this was based off of, because we did two shows.
I know. I'm going to ask you about that second show.
Okay.
How did you get out of New York City?
Right. Well, it wasn't by plane.
Yeah.
First of all, nothing was happening the day of. Or the day after.
We might want to tell everybody what that day was.
It was September 11, 2001.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was after the second show, which was September 10th, and the first show, which was the 8th, because there was a break in between, I think, because of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
But the first show was September 8th. The second show was September 10th. And I remember after that show, just... having more of a private celebration, dinner with a buddy of mine at the time, and had just kind of a celebratory dinner, and everything was great. And then my wife at the time, the next morning, we slept in late because, we had such a great night. So we slept in late, and I had this plan. I had two plans that I wanted to do. I wanted to go to Central Park and take my wife on a canoe ride. And I also wanted to go to my favorite place, my favorite restaurant for lunch, which is a restaurant called Le Bill Bouquet. And so I called the restaurant after I woke up. because I wanted to make reservations. I called and said, "Yeah, what's going on?" I go, I said, "I'd like to, you know, come to the spot today." And the person said, "Today's not a good day." I said, "Why?" She said, "It's not a good day. The people are crying. It's terrible. It's not a good day." I go, "What are you talking about?" The person went, "Have you seen the news?"
Oh,
I go,
God.
"No." Said, "You might want to turn the TV on right now." That's how we found out.
Wow. Damn.
And then after the initial shock, which took a long time to get over, then we started smelling smoke. And by the way, I was staying
what at, hotel? Yeah.
I was staying at the Plaza Athenae, way, way uptown. Wow. And you could smell the smoke there.
Wow. Damn.
The producer of the show, David Guest, was very good to me though, because he let me stay at the Plaza Athenae until the end of the week, or until I could get a way out.
Get out.
And so what happened was we kept trying by flights, and it was very, very, very difficult. Frida Payne, I remember, was one of the lucky ones. She got out on a plane. Came to find out later on that Michael...
that car ride with Elizabeth Taylor.
He went in. That was a whole... And,
that was real?
Yeah, wow. He did that. But I didn't know how...
Have y'all heard about that?
The cross country that they made a movie about?
With Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah.
And what's his name? Marlon Brando?
Yeah, I didn't know that was
I don't know. Because I didn't know that at the time, and I didn't know how the rest of the brothers made out. I didn't know how anybody else got out. But me and my wife, at that time, we couldn't get a plane out, so we just decided at the end of that week, that Saturday, that we'd rent a car. So we drove over to... We went over to Jersey and got a Hertz rental car, and we drove cross country. And it was part of like a mini cavalcade because Cheryl Lynn was with us.
Oh, man.
Cheryl Lynn?
Yeah. And
strange she, bedfellows.
Yeah, she and her cousin, or her manager actually, we didn't drive all together, but we drove like, you know, in separate cars, and we drove cross country all the way back. And we stopped in St. Louis where her manager's mom lived. And was it St. Louis? I'm pretty sure it was St. Louis. We stopped there and we made a couple other stops and we drove all the way. And that was the first and only time I ever drove cross country. And I never imagined it would be for that reason.
Damn. Shit.
It's been some traffic.
That's crazy.
Huh. Yeah. No traffic. Mm. No traffic. It was eerily calm and still. There's no traffic. And I remember hearing... them play this particular song a lot during our cross country ride, and it was a song by Enya.
Sail Away?
No.
That is not the right. No.
Radio changed like for that for like 2 weeks.
No.
Yeah.
They only play like Imagine.
And there was a whole no songs or the no playlist.
Yeah, which is why I OD'd on the Blueprint.
Yeah,
because it came out that day.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you remember? I'm sure you remember. Can you take us through where you were when you got the news about Mike?
Yes, I was in Beverly Hills, and I was. I just dropped off a watch to get repaired. And my wife at that time called me and said, "Did you hear about Michael?" I go, "What are you talking about?" I heard the news and I just...
You knew?
I was in shock. You know, it was just, you know. And yet, I wasn't, you know. And what I really remember after that is going through the preparations with Randy. Because Randy brought me in, and he wanted me to help out with the memorial. And then we had a meeting at Ken Ehrlich's house, Randy, Ken, and I, and we started talking things, you know, talking things through. And, you know, to artists and so forth. And I remember thinking, well, it would be really nice if Steve sang "I Never Dreamed You'd Leave in Summer." Mm. Which was deeply poetic because he did leave us in summer. Yeah. I remember going
I remember having private meetings, you know, with Randy, and I remember going down to LA Live, and it was the only time that I was in the LA Live executive building, you know, where all the offices were. And I remember having, we had this meeting with Randy and Ken and Simon, what's Simon's first name? Zeidman. He basically runs LA Live, Staples Center, and Microsoft Center. Lee Zeidman. Mm-hmm. LiveWiki wasn't there at that time, I don't think. But there were other executives, and we were discussing everything, like, you know, how many tickets for family, how many tickets for VIPs, all this kind of stuff, everything, mm-hmm. you know. And then I remember meeting at Staples with the brothers in a backstage room, and it was me and the brothers, Ken Ehrlich, Valdez Flagg, legendary stage manager, and maybe one other person, and we were just all sitting there. And at different points, you know, one of the brothers would cry. It was really, really heavy. And I remember also taking the walk through the underground tunnel from Staples to what is now Microsoft Center, because there's this underground tunnel that connects the two. Because it was built that way for, you know, just as a cool thing for any artist that wanted to do double duty or whatever. Mm-hmm. Easy access, you know. And so we walked this underground tunnel from Staples to... it was a different name then, but whatever. But so we go there, and that was designed for the family to leave Staples to go to Microsoft Center for the overflow of people who couldn't get into Staples. And it was designed for the, so the family was going to go. The original idea was that the family was going to go and thank them, mm-hmm. but they didn't do it. They didn't do it. We did a practice walk, but after it actually happened, they didn't do it. They didn't do it because it was like enough already. You know, it was like you know, with everything that went on, so yeah, it was very heavy. And I remember having a very, very private moment with Marlon at Havenhurst, and him, you know, we talked and you know, he cried on my shoulder. You know, very, very difficult. But you know, but I also remember, you know, at Staples when we were there going through things, that Barry came over, and we all took pictures together, mm-hmm. Barry and the brothers and me, and just all kinds of memories. You know,
how can one be creative in a time like that? Because, you know, you have to go over arrangements and, okay, Mariah, what key do you want to sing in, and da-da-da-da, and, you know, call up musicians and background sound check and all.
You know
what?
You just do. You just do, man. I mean, one thing Ehrlich is really good at is just forging through, no matter what, because he's had to. In all kinds, he's been hit with all kinds of last-minute things, like, you know, they were rehearsing the Grammys, like the day of.
The Grammys?
The Grammy thing where
Rihanna,
you know,
and
thank
Chris
you.
Rowe,
thank
my
you.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, the Rihanna,
yeah.
Chris
you
Rowe
were,
thing.
I was there MD? That day.
Were you the MD?
Jeez, I think I was. I know I was there.
Dude.
I know I was there.
All right, to
so
give
I think
you
I was,
all backstory.
So you talk about having to change on the fly?
Yeah. Wow. And what was it? What?
The backstory was that the Chris Brown, Rihanna thing just happened.
Okay.
And that was the year they decided to let artists double up on things. So Timberlake had like two or three songs.
Okay.
And Chris Brown had two or three songs. And Rihanna had two or three songs. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be like the first mashup thing of duets and multiple songs. Mm-hmm. But without Chris Brown and Rihanna there was like space for five songs. And I never... Two things happened that day, which is the most surreal shit I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. One, Ehrlich and his whole crew, literally, now it's about, let's say, an hour, 15 minutes. Until they realize that Brown and Rihanna are no-show.
Both of them, yeah.
So they're just scouring up the...
scrambling, yeah.
Boys to Men, can you sing, let's say it together, Al Green, can you... Mm-hmm. They're just grabbing people from the audience.
Like this.
We need, wow. A 4 minute like song. That so that whole thing of like Boyz II Men singing "Let's Stay Together," uh-huh.
yeah, and Justin and all that stuff.
None of that shit was planned.
No,
shit. The superstition thing with Stevie Wonder with the Jonas Brothers.
With Jonas Brothers, yeah.
None of that shit was planned. But wait, here's the other funny thing. So, the Coldplay controversy with Joe Satriani.
Oh yeah, when they had jacked the
right.
Viva La Vida joint.
So they've been running away from getting their summons from Satriani's people for like 2 months. So he had a plan.
That's how they got.
He had a plan. He's like, "Yo, I'm gonna get the motherfuckers at the Grammys." When I tell you, you remember them old Keystone Caper things where like you watch
the Keystone Cops,
and yeah, like the cops on in this room.
The cops. Run in the room.
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, that's funny.
So you had the people running this way to serve the papers, and then Coldplay running this way. And then
wow.
It was like you could have put Fly the Bumblebee to the shit I saw. Of just,
really? I had no idea.
Just and to top it, oh God, I don't know if I should.
We'll edit it out if we need to.
No, but just.
No, I said all my stuff.
No, it's just the end of the night. You know, like artists are like very. Think of like a cat like Oasis. You know, those guys like, hey, I don't care about the Grammy. Like, fuck the Grammys and that sort of thing. But Tom York took losing to Coldplay very, very hard.
Mm. Oh, really?
And
how hard?
A very emotional way. So okay. That was the most surreal.
Damn.
But to see, literally between Ehrlich just scrambling for people to sing shit and Coldplay and Satriani's.
I had no idea that bit was going on.
Dog. It was the funniest day of my life.
Wow. Yeah,
it was funny.
I'm glad somebody had something to laugh about that day.
Well, it didn't. The thing was, we didn't. No.
I know. You didn't know what was happening, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like being in the New York doing the blackout,
right?
Like in Detroit, I saw y'all. I knew y'all were in the blackout, but I don't think y'all like really knew because there was no TV to turn on to see.
Yeah, right. You couldn't see.
Right, we couldn't.
Right,
you couldn't be told you were in a blackout.
But it was just like, oh, we heard like Rihanna's not coming. Like we didn't till I got home. Then we saw, oh shit, that happened.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was the sort of the thing. Wow. So, did we cover everything in your life?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
You know.
Like, what
it's
are we
like a whole part two?
I would
part
say
two,
yes.
Part two. This is already a two-part episode.
We talk about like weird science and movies and shit.
Oh, wow. You did weird science? You scored weird science?
I didn't score it. I did. Actually, I just did one thing.
Okay.
For a female artist who the girl who did Private Joy.
Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did a cover Prince?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I sang the demo.
Private Joy.
Produced by Jimmy Iovine.
Wow.
Oh, that's right.
Somebody asked me to do that, produce that thing for that girl. So I did. I did Private Joy.
Weren't you in the live scene of Streets of Fire? Were you in the band? No.
No, okay. No, I was in another movie, darling.
What movie?
This Is It?
My only movie debut. I didn't do This Is It.
Yeah, because Michael.
Oh, right. You're right. Sorry.
Okay.
I was young.
Uh-oh. Say it.
But you haven't lived until you've been directed by Steven Spielberg. Thank you.
What movie?
Oh,
Cha-ching.
Yes. The Duke joint.
You were the piano player. Time to go.
We got two people.
Time to go. Color Purple.
Wow. So is he. Ron Sigalo is in the Color Purple, too.
He's in the Color Purple.
I was an extra in the Color Purple as well. I was six.
What, were you a baby?
Yeah.
I was six. I was one of the kids. The scene scene where she's hanging up clothes and she's saying, no, you got to fight. You got to, what Celia and Eddie are talking.
Yeah.
And so then like a kid comes and runs through the sheet. And she's like, y'all get on away from here. I was one of the kids.
No way, that's hysterical.
I actually got out shooting pictures. Yeah,
guys,
dude.
You're not going to believe this, but also I was in the game.
Yeah.
You were the mailman?
No. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the mailman.
He was with Miss Millie.
You were the kid. You were the kid. You were one of the kids of the owner of the general store.
Right.
Yeah.
You gonna buy something,
yeah,
girl?
You see him, yeah, you would. Right.
You gonna buy something, girl?
Yeah, you would have been. But time to go. Time
wait, how many times did you do that?
But guess what, though? Guess what?
What?
That's not even my voice doing time to go. They overdubbed that.
Oh, wait, wait.
I could, but I did say it.
Yeah.
I did say it, but in the they final, in the overdubbing, I guess it wasn't loud enough. So they had somebody else go, well, time to go. But I did, that's me playing.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that hysterical?
Fucking yes, dope.
So, awesome. So Laia, if you want a really good laugh,
yeah,
whip that out one night. You'll crack up. Tonight. Yeah.
Gotta go.
You'll laugh yourself silly.
Wait, Greg.
But that's how I met Oprah. What? And that's how I met Danny.
Danny Glover, yeah.
Right.
And that's how I met the cast of Wacky Characters. Mm. And yeah.
Wait.
Oh, there's another thing that I did that I'm very proud of.
What? Why,
that you probably didn't know I did.
Okay.
Thanks to Ken Ehrlich. Oprah's final two shows. Thank you.
Oh, man. Okay.
Wait.
What were her final two shows?
An extravaganza with every star you've ever heard of in your entire life in the entire galaxy that she's ever interviewed that came out.
Oh, to say goodbye and
yeah,
that stuff. So what musical moment, who was the last, you MD'd whatever the musical moment was?
Oh, I MD'd the whole thing.
So who was the last person to sing?
I don't know who the last person was, but probably my favorite segment was when we surprised her with Steve.
Oh, okay.
Because what happened was the setup was Jamie, you know, went to her and started, you know, talking all his smack and everything, and he started "Isn't She Lovely," right? So he started it. So we did a slow version, and that's me playing with him and everything, and then I do some chord changes, you know, some different chords to set up into the original key of "Isn't She Lovely" for Steve to rise out of the floor on the piano. He goes, "Isn't she lovely?" And she turns around and goes, "Oh my God!" So that was, yeah.
Wait, I gotta ask. Have you ever had, as an MD, a Murphy's Law moment? Where you...
Everything can go wrong? I don't
like,
know.
Like, has a sequencer ever not worked on, you know, when jam is on at the intro? Or, you know, did you miss if you can't feed your baby cue on that freeze or want to be starting something? Or
We probably did. We probably had some. You mean during the bad tour?
Well, yeah, I mean, just in general.
Or in general? Not, yeah, probably, but not anything that just stands out to where I go, oh, you won't believe this. So. I'm sure they happened, but they were mercifully far and few between.
Oh, okay. Well,
wait.
Great.
I'm sorry. I really do want to know what you played on We Are the World. Like, what instruments that you?
Oh, just piano.
I played piano,
and
because Lionel plays piano too, right?
Yeah, but well, and to your point, yes, and he co-wrote the song, but no, he doesn't need to play it. He's one of the featured artists, so he doesn't need to play. So
there were other synths and stuff though.
Quincy had a few of us. It was me, David Page, and I think, and there was one other one. I can't remember who. They're gonna kill me though. But I played piano. Page played, electric piano, I think, or other instruments, and there was a third keyboardist as well. Strings? So there were a bunch of us. No, well, just other synths, not strings, but yeah. So there were, I'm pretty sure, three keyboard players, and I did the piano.
Thank you.
Well, Brother Greg.
Amir.
You gave us.
This has been fucking amazing, man.
Dog, you brought it. You brought the stories. You brought the drama.
My hands
you brought
ain't
the
stopped
mystery.
Sweating.
Well, you know what? But it takes someone as nerdy and as knowledgeable as you are, and your fine team, let me just say right now, you guys are really wonderful.
Thank you.
Even
thank
Steve.
You so much.
And I must say,
I don't know.
Okay, no, I get it.
Bodily function, that's all.
I know, I get it. And I have to pee right now, but I must say,
me too.
I had no idea that I would be here for over 3 hours, but
like,
I have enjoyed every second of it. It's felt like 3 minutes, and blessings to you all, and I really
same
appreciate
to you, man.
You, yeah, thank
too.
You.
Just thank you for just for all your contributions, all your music, just for raising all of us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you,
man. Well, thank you on behalf of Sugar Steve and Unpaid. Well,
Well, he's not here.
On behalf, spirit. On behalf of Sugar Steve and Boss Bill and Fontigolo and Laia. Yeah, I'd like to say thank you, Greg. And this is Questlove, Questlove Supreme. And we will see you on the next go round, only on Pandora.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.